First of all, I'd like to thank His Grace Vishwanbhar Prabhu for inviting me to this Sankirtan festival. This is actually the first time I've ever attended this Sankirtan festival. I haven't been here in the country for the last 14 years. I've been based in two places in those 14 years, 10 years in Sri Vrindavan Dham, and I had the great fortune to associate with His Holiness Bhakti Rasamrita Prabhu Maharaj when he was there as Devamrita Prabhu, as the temple president. And we share many, many fond memories and association. And also Amsterdam in the Netherlands. So I'm very happy to be here. I'd just like also to mention that Vishwanbhar Prabhu was mentioning that he's having some bodily difficulties. Well, there seems to be like a little cluster of us that are having these difficulties, because I'm also suffering a little bit from kidney stones, and Shivaram Swami just recently came over a couple of days ago, had a successful operation to remove part of his prostate. So this is going to happen to everybody, as Srila Prabhupada quoted in Vrindavan when he was lying in his last few days. He said, don't think this is not going to happen to you. All these miseries, adhyatmic, adibhautik, adidaivik, they're reality, especially in this material world. And the idea is that we want to go to another reality where we don't have these miseries thrust upon us, whether we like them or not. But just like with book distribution, for some people, it's like a misery to meet a devotee. What are you doing? Why are you coming? Why are you entering into my space? Get away. Isn't it true? Sometimes you get this type of reaction. It's not just all love and peace, man. Oh, wow, cool. You know, this is really nice. This is exactly what I've been looking for. But occasionally, to take the pain and the bad, you know, feelings that people have towards Krishna. The asuras, of course, we always meet asuras, but we also meet potential suras as well. And that's what makes it all worthwhile, isn't it? And so Vishwanbhar Prabhu has mentioned that we're doing a spontaneous thing. I like spontaneity. I never keep notes. Well, I do sometimes, but generally speaking, I like also spontaneous reciprocation. It keeps everybody on edge because nobody knows what's going to be said next. So actually, I want to take you back to an era perhaps when most of you weren't even born. 1969. Who was born? Put your hand up if you were born before 1969. Before 1969, not so much, maybe about a third or less than a third. And the rest of you were just a twinkle in your mother's eye. So before we had book distribution, we had magazine distribution because we didn't have any books. Anybody remember that? Sarva Mangala, 2, 3, Kishore, Rupa Vilas Prabhu. So, you also remember when we had no books? Interesting. So it's about six of us out of this temple full of devotees. And actually Prabhupada's plan then was, before distribute books, distribute books, distribute books, it was distribute back to Godhead. Distribute back to Godhead. Distribute back to Godhead. He wanted it flooding. He wanted that magazine to be flooding the world. He said, just like Time and Newsweek magazines. He said, our Back to Godhead magazine should also be in the same category of distribution. And at one stage, we were distributing about 25,000 Back to Godhead magazines a month. We had to, because we had to pay for them. And they were being printed in Japan by Dai Nippon. And Prabhupada actually personally went over there and met the chief executive officer of Dai Nippon Printing. And he also, of course, instructed that the Krishna book be printed there too. And I just wanted to mention too that, by the way, I have no qualification. I'm not an expert Sankirtan devotee. I learn from others. I'm always trying to learn, and I'm always trying to see how I can improve in my presentation of Srila Prabhupada's literature. And I'd like to thank especially Sridhar Prabhu, who's here, I think, somewhere, maybe in another room. He's not in this room. And his brother, Premarnava Prabhu, and of course also Vishwambar Prabhu, for tolerating me. Because I'm full of faults. I'm not going to say I'm the most fallen, because Prabhupada said none of you are the most fallen. So I don't claim that title either. But it is very, very difficult, actually, to overcome all the urges of the body, and especially the mind. The mind is definitely, only for me, I can honestly say, it becomes quietened, or at least it's put in the back of my head. Its importance when I'm engaged in kirtan, class, and out on the streets distributing Prabhupada's books. So it's a wonderful therapy also. So actually, in 1969, I mentioned that year, we had the good fortune that Tamal Krishna, who was a brahmachari at the time, he came all the way from Los Angeles to teach us how to distribute magazines. And because before that, and perhaps some of you also remember the time even before we had magazines, we had conch shells and incense sticks. Remember that? Was that ever done? It was done here. We used to be armed with these huge pink conch shells. And so we used them as a begging bowl. And we would have a couple of coins and shake, rattle the conch shell. And sometimes it appeared that we're just about to mug somebody or whack somebody in the face with a conch shell. And I would say more than 50% of people put a donation of a coin in the conch shell, because they were really struck with fear that this strange person in robes is going to whack me on the head with his weapon. And what did we give out as a reward for getting that small donation? A stick of incense. And we used to congregate outside. There was a musical at that time called Hair. You've heard of that musical? And the only reason we were congregating out there is because in one part of this 2.5-3 hour long musical, they did chant Hare Krishna. And so obviously people heard the Hare Krishna when they were in the theater, and when they came out of this is in Shastri Theater, and it was there for a long time, and they would meet us with our armed with our conch shells and incense sticks. And they thought maybe we were part of what the act or something like that. And the average donation we get daily was £10. So you can imagine. It wasn't so easy in those days to collect big funds. Then, some or another, I want to jump a little bit to 1971. Because this went on. Of course, the Krishna book was published in 1970. With the donation that Sriman George Harrison gave. He gave $19,000. Many people think it was $20,000, but Shamsundar insisted that he didn't want to ask for $20,000 because it sounded like a huge amount. So he said, all right, $19,000. Doesn't sound so bad as 20. So with that $19,000, the Krishna book in two volumes. Perhaps you've seen the old one, the very large books about this height with a very nice dust cover and silver and KRSNA emblazoned in red. And so with the red and the silver, it almost looked, you know, like it was moving because of the red and the silver contrast. And some another, I was in Los Angeles at the right time. This is at the end of 1971. And this is even pre-Radha Damodar, because I'm sure all of you have come across the Radha Damodar party, and they were traveling all over America in their buses headed by Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Vishnu Jain and so on and so forth. And they ended up stealing lots and lots of brahmacharis from lots and lots of temples. And they got into trouble for that too, besides distributing so many books. They were stealing devotees whenever they got the opportunity. And once the devotees got a taste for traveling, being carefree and everything being provided for them, they never went back to their temples. And the temple presidents would go to Prabhupada and complain like anything that our temples are being hijacked by these devotees. Of course, the positive thing was that so many books were going out. So before that, pre-Radha Damodar, I don't know how many of you have heard this particular story. There was a devotee called Keshava. He was the younger brother of Karandar. Karandar, at that time, he was a very powerful devotee. He was a GBC for Los Angeles, and he was in charge of the BBT. And so his brother was also a very powerful devotee, and he had purchased a big school bus. I think it's a White, that's what it's called, American company, White, built school buses. And he'd taken out all of the chairs inside, and he'd made it into a traveling ashram. And there were many Maharati devotees, and using that word because they were already a legend in their own time. I'm talking about people like Sridhar, who became Sridhar Swami, Premarnava, Vayala, Bhakta Vatsal, and there's a few others. There's about 8 or 10 of us. And when Sukeshava decided that he wanted to fill up his school bus with Krishna books and with full-time book distributors, and so they, on their way from San Francisco to Los Angeles, they were visiting different small towns and colleges and universities and so on, and then they reached Los Angeles. And there was one devotee in Los Angeles called Budi Manta. Anybody heard of Budi Manta, Prabhu? His legend still lives on. That's really nice. I got to meet him, and his enthusiasm was like absolutely in your face. In my face, anyway. It was so contagious. He said, you know, what's coming? Keshava's coming. This amazing book party. And they're looking for volunteers. And so actually I kind of went, wow, that sounds really interesting. Where are they going? Well, they're going to travel through Southern California into Arizona, then into New Mexico, and who knows where they're going to go after that. They're just going to keep going until they sell all the Krishna books. And I thought, wow, I'd love to be part of that. I wonder if they would accept, because I was British. I wasn't American. I was thinking, you never know. You know, it's like a new experience for me. And anyway, so Keshava, he gave a class at the New Dwarka temple, and he did actually. He said, any volunteers out there who would like to join us on a journey, a transcendental journey, and distribute Prabhupada's Krishna books? And I put my hand up. I had to. I couldn't resist it. It was just so tempting. And he said, okay, you can come on. And so I joined them, and it was just amazing. I remember we went from Los Angeles to Palm Springs. Now, the reason that particular place is called Palm Springs, because it's actually in a desert. It's very hot. Anybody been to Palm Springs, Southern California? What's the weather like? But the reason it was called Palm Springs is because they had all these date palms. You know, the best quality date is called Medjool. Medjool? Some name like that? You've heard of that name? Yeah. They're nice to offer to the deities because they're large and juicy and really tasty. So Keshava, who was leading us, you know, he came across this date farm. And these palm trees are enormous. Just like, you know, there's a description of when Krishna and Balaram went to the forest. And that was a different type of, it wasn't date palms, but it was another type of palm. You know the name? In the forest of Talavan. Lord Krishna and Balaram fought the demon Denakasura and twirled him around and around. So these were enormous palm trees. And the ones in Palm Springs, to me, they looked like they were 100 foot tall. I mean, they just looked giant, ginormous. I've never seen in my life. Of course, everything in America is big. It's bigger than anywhere else. What do you expect, you know? They've got the biggest gorge, which, you know, what it goes, what name does it have? The Grand Canyon, 150 miles by 5 miles. 150 miles, I mean, that's like, enormous distance. Biggest roads, biggest cars, biggest everything. So they had the biggest date palms as well. And Keshava found the owner of the date farm, because he noticed that there was lots of dates lying on the ground. And the farmer said, because he asked me, he said, can you give us a donation of dates? We'd like to add them to our diet. Because basically our diet was made of a really rich cauliflower, potato, and pea sabji. And we didn't really have much in the way of sweet. It was sweet rice. I mean, it was really traditional ISKCON, either sweet rice or halava. Sweet rice, halava. Sweet rice, halava. And the sabji. And he would stay back. Actually, he didn't go out himself. He stayed back and looked after the bus. And also, he cooked. And he was a really good cook. And the interesting thing was that the reward, if you distributed more Krishna books in one day than anybody else, he would add a half pound block of sweet butter to your sabji. Does that sound familiar? Is that still done anywhere? Well, we're lacto-vegetarians, I mean, you know. What's a half pound block of butter? I mean, it's, you know, it melts really quickly, especially when the sabji is warm, and the sabji starts floating in this sweet butter. I remember even the name of the butter, Land O'Lakes. Is that, you heard of that? Yeah, Land O'Lakes. And we didn't have any bathing facility on the bus. It wasn't like there was a shower or something like we have in mobile homes or caravans. But at the petrol stations, and the petrol stations were the biggest petrol stations you've ever seen in your life. In those days, of course, petrol was really cheap. It was like 25 cents a gallon. So, people had huge vehicles, Winnebagos and so on and so forth, and they could afford to drive all over the country because, you know, petrol was 25 cents a gallon. So it cost like $3 to fill up. Of course, now it's almost $4 a gallon now. Times have changed. And so at these petrol stations, they were fully equipped, not just with one toilet. They had a row of toilets and a row of showers with hot water. And it was just amazing. I never come across them. I think in maybe some places where there's truck stops and stuff like that, they have that kind of facility. But I was really impressed that everything was being provided by the petrol station. And so the farmer at the date farm, he said, anything that lands on the ground, you can take. You can't climb up the palm trees and take what's hanging from the trees. But anything that's lying on the ground, you can take. So we acquired these milk crates and we went wild. And there was just so many dates. There was like, I think we ended up having about 15 crates. And the crates were this wide, this deep, full of dates. So we had a date feast every day. But the trouble is that when you eat too many dates, you get sores in your mouth. And that stops you from speaking or having kirtan or selling a book. So we had to kind of ration out the dates. But the dates, they were perfectly okay. In fact, they were sweeter than the ones in the trees. They were that sweet and heavy laden with sucrose, sugar, that they fell to the ground. But, that was ecstatic. I mean, I never, ever imagined I'd be in a place where there was unlimited dates because, again, I was in the land of honey. What is it called? Land of milk and honey. Milk as well. So much milk. And the milk came from donations. And I just remember being introduced to a gallon of, you know, container of milk. We didn't have those here. We had pints of milk and glass bottles. But it was just so nice. The association was wonderful. There was a couple of other devotees as well. Yogesh Chandra. The names are just coming. They're just jumping. And Jambavan. So, these were, again, you know, just like Maharati devotees. And just wonderful association. And so much fun. Anyway, we're in Palm Springs during the day, we go to colleges and universities. And in the evening, we go to what they call tract houses, which means housing estates, basically. And the houses are very close to each other. So we were doing the colleges and universities. We went to one university in Southern California. And I was going there, just dressed as a devotee, not in any disguise. We didn't have any, actually, quite honestly, I didn't have any normal clothes until 1973. All I owned was dhotis and kurtas. Nothing else, dhotis and kurtas. And so I was on the campus, and I met this gentleman, and he had a mustache, and I thought, that's a bit weird, because most young people were not into beards. They're into long hair, but not so much into growing their facial hair. And he was taking an interest, and I said, oh, it's only $20 for the two books. And all of a sudden he said, all right, you're under arrest. I said, what? I said, yeah. I'm part of the security here, and you're not allowed to do this. I said, what about, you know, doesn't it say free speech? Isn't that one of the, what? It's in the Constitution. It's one of the First or Second Amendments. Free religious expression. Anyway, he handcuffed me with my hands behind my back, and he made a whole deal and took me to the office, and I was sitting in the chair, and I was thinking, how dare you do this, sir? I'm not even American. I'm British. I'm going to call my consulate. You're going to be in big trouble. And the guy believed me. He wasn't expecting that. And then a mad Scotsman on his hands. I don't think there were too many mad Scotsmen visiting university campuses at that time. But then he said, oh, I'm really sorry I did this. I didn't realize. And then he, you know, let me free. Didn't even bring the police into the situation or take any details or anything. I just kept, you know, in my kind of Scottish way saying, you're going to really have a hard time for my consulate, I'll tell you. I'm friends with the ambassador, and he's going to call you a person. Anyway, Hare Krishna, we're allowed to do things like that under duress. So, you know, we went through Southern California into Arizona. Arizona is even hotter by about 10 degrees. The temperature there goes up to about 110 Fahrenheit. And New Mexico, I remember Phoenix, we went to Phoenix, and that was a fantastic university. They took so many Krishna books there. And I really wanted to extend. Actually, I had a three-month visa, and when we were in Phoenix, I applied for an extension of 3 months. I really wanted to stay there for as long as we had the Krishna books. It was just so refreshing and so enlivening. And of course, Prabhupada was really happy too. He was hearing the number of books that were going out. So that was before. That's just pre-Radha Damodar. Then I got a call from my GBC. Not in America, in England. What are you doing in America? You're not supposed to be there. You're British. Come back here. In those days, we were saying, yes, sir. You know, we didn't ever argue with our GBC authority. After all, they were appointed by Prabhupada, and they were representing Prabhupada, so we thought, okay. And so we came back to Berry Place. And I kept thinking, wow, I really want to see if this can work out here too. Because I was really so enthused by the experience there, I wanted to graft it. I wanted to transfer over here. And we had a few boxes of Krishna books. And I introduced this idea that, you know, whoever distributed the biggest number of Krishna books, and this is during the day, wasn't on the street, because we thought that people wouldn't have enough money in their pockets for these big books. So we went door to door to places like Highgate, Hampstead, Chelsea, Kensington, you know, all the wealthy parts of London. And went to, you know, we kind of chose, you know, really expensive looking flats and houses. And again, just dressed as a devotee. And actually, it was very, very successful. And so whoever distributed the biggest number of Krishna books, they didn't just get a half-pound block of butter. They got to eat all of Radha Landanishwara's maha. And in those days, we had some really good cooks, 1972. And what we would do was, because our prasadam room was in the basement, and the maha prasad would come out, and it was a lot. It wasn't just a small, tiny little sort of portion. It was a massive feast. And we'd sit around this devotee who had just done the biggest number of Krishna books and watch him eat the whole maha. And if he was merciful, he would share it, but a lot of them were not merciful. No mercy. But they kind of struggled too, you know, to eat all the prasad. But that was kind of fun to watch. Then the other thing, of course, Prabhupada also loved when his books or magazines were translated into foreign languages. And we got the chance to serve Prabhupada in Rome. And one of the first things we wanted to do was publish La Revista. Revista is magazine. Ritorno a Dio. Ritorno a Dio. Back to Godhead in Italian. Ritorno a Dio. So when we got the first magazine, it was Ali Krishna, who's now Madhusevita Prabhu's wife. She was the one who translated everything into English, the Back to Godhead English, Back to Godhead into Italian. And she did a wonderful job, and we sent off the first copy of that magazine to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada wrote back, he said, "The happiness that I am deriving from receiving the first Italian Back to Godhead magazines cannot be measured in all the three worlds." That's a huge compliment. So, yeah, we thought, all right, this is something that Prabhupada is really happy with. And so, another by Prabhupada's mercy, as we say, Yasha Prashada Bhagavad Prashado, Yasha Prashada Nagatir Katopi. By the mercy of Krishna, one gets Guru, and by the mercy of Guru, one gets Krishna. So, it's just being in the right place at the right time, just like Maharaj was mentioning about this one devotee who happened to knock quite forcefully, not knowing what was going on behind that door. But there's also amazing other examples, especially through the potency of kirtan. I don't know if you know this, but Barack Obama, he has a copy of Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. And he received this copy on the same day that he was sworn in as the President of the United States of America on his inauguration speech. Because one of his best school friends from Hawaii happens to be a devotee. And we know this for sure because we met his sister in Vrindavan, and she verified that on that same day, inauguration day, her brother, as a way of congratulating him, handed him Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is. Besides that, he also, before being a grown-up, as a student, he would quite regularly go to the Hare Krishna temple in Honolulu. And also he would attend gatherings. There's two groups of devotees who chant kirtan. There's the Siddha Sarup group, and there's Lady Tulsi Gabbard, who has become involved in federal government in the House of Representatives. Her parents are devotees of Siddha Sarup, and so also is she. So Barack Obama was also acquainted with the two groups. So we can say that he's the very first president of the United States of America who's chanted the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra many, many times. Interesting enough, when Bill Clinton was a student, he was a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford University. And when we went there with Srila Prabhupada in 1969, he might have been one of those students because the whole of the town hall was filled up with young people. And actually Prabhupada saw that potential. And actually on the way back, because we were living at that time on the property belonging to John Lennon, Tittenhurst Park, and we had this minibus and we all drove with Srila Prabhupada to Oxford Town Hall and came back. And on the way back he said that I want a temple in London for the mass and a temple in Oxford for the class. So that still is something that perhaps someone, one of you may want to take up responsibility to do that. Of course, we do go to Oxford quite regularly. There's lots of active participation in book distribution. Because the local MP, she's a member of the Green Party, and she favors the devotees. In fact, I shook her by the hand. One time I was there in the pedestrian street in Oxford, and she came along and she was meeting all the shopkeepers, and she also met us. And she said, keep up the good work. So we're getting more and more recognition. Srila Prabhupada is getting, of course, the recognition because he's the one who's the revolutionary, by writing these books. In fact, Prabhupada used to say to us, he said, if the state government knew how dangerous we were and what we were doing, because it's a direct frontal attack on sense gratification, full-on attack. He said they would have arrested me and thrown away the key. He said, but because I'm very small in stature, I'm very elderly, and I'm an Indian, and so they don't take any notice. So like Prabhupada said, in like a needle and out like a plow. So that's actually the future growth of ISKCON, that we have to always try to be a good representative of Srila Prabhupada in all circumstances, on the street or when you're going door to door, or however you're managing to do this. Of course, in India, the way that they were able to distribute a million Bhagavad Gitas at Gita Jayanti time is that they have so many connections with people who own hotels, huge factories, huge business conglomerates, and it's actually they're very, very pious because they've been cultivated, and so devotees they go to those very influential people and say, why don't you take 10,000 Bhagavad Gitas and give one to all of your workers, all your employees? And just like Gideon's Bible is to be found in every bedside drawer in practically every hotel. So eventually one day, every other bedside table, because there's always two, there's one either side of the bed, there'll be a Gideon's Bible, one side, and a Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita on the other side. should we ask questions, possibly, I think? Yeah, if there's any questions or comments. Oh, I forgot to mention, too, that there was a very famous sculptor, English sculptor. This is again in the early 1970s. His name is David Wynne. And he had a private audience with the Queen because he was going to make a sculpture of the Queen. And he was also a close friend of the temple. And he, in that moment when he was alone with Queen Elizabeth, he handed her Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. So she's had that Gita since the early 1970s. And sometimes she quotes indirectly from the Bhagavad Gita. Because she understands, she accepts that this isn't just a Christian country. This is, you know, multi-faith. So we can't imagine. It's inconceivable how much influence there is behind the scenes. And of course, again, another thing you may know or may not know, but when the Cold War was going on between the Soviet era and the West, there was a lot of discussion about when will be the next world war and who will be responsible for that war. And Prabhupada was actually asked in a morning walk in Mayapur, what would happen if the Soviets attacked the West and they won? And he said, well, it would become more difficult to distribute Krishna consciousness, because basically communism means sudra mentality, and capitalism means vaishya mentality. So he said it's better if the vaishyas are still in control rather than the sudras, because they'll put up a lot of opposition. And he said, but the way to avoid this conflict is by distributing Bhagavad Gita's in Russia. So the devotees at that time, they organized a printing of 5 million copies in Russian, in very thin paper. It's called Bible thin paper, and small, like pocket size Bhagavad Gita's. And they were smuggled in, and 5 million copies of Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita in Russian was distributed. And very shortly after that, in 1985, we started to hear two words, glasnost and perestroika. That's all I know about Russian language, glasnost and perestroika. But there was an amazing transformation, and I can honestly say that's due to the fact that those devotees in charge of the BBT for Europe and Russia, and just the determination, hearing what Prabhupada had said and actually executing what Prabhupada had said, then there's a whole total transformation between relationships. Of course, sometimes they're a little bumpy, but that's to be expected. But if we just execute Srila Prabhupada's will, his desire, because he's left us with an amazing legacy. And also, he would sometimes say quite heavy things, and especially in Vrindavan, towards the latter end of his life. He would say, I have given gallons of my blood. That's what he said. I've given gallons of my blood in preparing these books for you. They're for your benefit, so you please read them. Not just distribute them, but please read them. That is so important, because that's what gives us even more strength and determination. So we don't want to waste all those gallons of blood that Srila Prabhupada has used to stay up late at night. One time, actually, he sent me to Delhi to purchase some Ayurvedic medicine for him. It was called Yogendra Ras. You've heard? Yogendra Ras? It's actually made from purified mercuric oxide. Now, mercury is poisonous. It's deadly. But there was one Ayurvedic shop in Old Delhi. It's called the Sadhana Oshadalaya. You've heard of that? Sadhana Oshadalaya. They were based in Calcutta, but they had branches in Dhaka and Delhi. And so I purchased this Yogendra Ras for Srila Prabhupada. And he took it. Why? Because sometimes he would suffer from what's known as brain fag, when the brain is not fully functioning. And why did he want to do that? Because he wanted to complete the translation of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And I saw him personally take that. The top was a little glass vial, about that size, with a little cork stopper and some red wax that sealed the stopper. And he broke it, opened it, poured it into his mortar, added a little honey, and started to crush up these little brown beads of this mercuric oxide, reddish brown, and he would take this for us, not for himself. And there's so many things that Prabhupada did for us, and you know it's important to really try to appreciate the greatness and the great authority of Srila Prabhupada, and we can only really begin to appreciate Prabhupada's greatness by actually really seriously studying his books, by reading them at least 1 hour a day. So any questions or comments on what's been said so far?